People keep saying that Jesus is Lord. He'll take me in the rapture. He'll come with a sword. Preachers on TV tell me I'm living wrong. But I've tasted the lips of sweet Babylon. Sweet Babylon, oh heavenly harlot, let down your hair and take me to bed. Hold out your cup and I'll...
Welcome to Thelema Now, a podcast about Aleister Crowley, ritual, and magic. Our guest today is Lon Milo Duquette, and here is your host, Frater Puck.
Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Love is the law, love under will. Our guest today is Lon Milo Duquette, and how you doing, Lon?
I'm doing fine.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that track we came in with?
That is my song, Sweet Babylon. And I recorded it about, I guess, 3 years ago. And I've been desperately trying to expose it all over the planet.
How appropriate.
As much as I can, yes. And it's on a little CD along with nine other tunes that I call the White Album, Lon Milo Duquette's White Album.
Uh-huh.
And the only reason I call it that is because I couldn't afford color.
Wow.
And so it's one of the tunes. I've also got a YouTube version of that.
Right.
Where I just kind of shot it in my office here, and but it's one of my favorite tunes. And
yes, it's one of my favorites too. I'm glad we could begin with it. I mean, maybe it was a dream, but I feel like I saw you singing this one time in my living room.
I'm sure I did sing it in your living room. Yeah.
So it's nice
much
to see
you
that
tried
it's
to
getting
stop
up.
Me. I did it in spite of all the protests. I went ahead and finished it.
But you're here because we are going to talk about your new album.
Yes. I've got a new one, and it is ingeniously named The Black Album.
Hey, yes.
And actually, the full title is Lon Milo Duquette's Number 2. I couldn't resist the potty humor.
Of course.
But yeah, I got ten more tunes on the Black Album, and it's and both of these things are just me and my guitar, and they're not really I didn't hire a band or a lot of expensive recording. I just more or less wanted to get songs and material laid down in such a way as that they won't get lost,
right,
after I shuffle off this mortal coil. It's a little weird. Both the White Album and the Black Album are a kind of a curious mix of just things I liked, things that please me.
And so, right.
Like Sweet Babylon is pretty country sounding.
Sure.
And I don't mind the country, the country style, and the format of country things. And I come from Nebraska,
and so
I'm a rube. I'm a rube and a hick. Anyway, so I don't feel like I'm being all that pretentious, using the style. But like Sweet Babylon, it doesn't have your normal country subject matter.
Right.
I don't know why that I'm doing this in my golden years here.
That's what I was going to ask, is why I know that you were, maybe our audience is familiar with your writing, your speaking engagements, your involvement with the OTO, your involvement with Masonry. But some may be surprised at your past as a recording artist. And maybe you could share that with us a bit.
Sure. Way back when I was a kid in Nebraska, my dad got terribly, terribly, terminally ill. My mom had to go to work, and I had to figure out a way to bring in some cash for the family. Like most boys my age, back in the early 60s, you know, I played guitar. So I organized a band, and we were so narcissistic and self-centered that we really didn't realize how bad we were, and so we projected the illusion that we were good. And we got a lot of work playing on the weekends, and you had to travel a lot, find the gigs and play these sock hops,
right,
they would call them. But every cow town in Nebraska and Kansas and Iowa, had a huge dance hall. We had no trouble filling them up. So every weekend we would go out, and then it got so that a lot of the week nights we were traveling 200 miles to play a gig on a school night too. We called ourselves the Panics. isn't that something?
Yeah, it is.
And we called ourselves the Panics, and I had a 1960 blue Volkswagen van. Just like the blue Volkswagen van I have parked right out here in the driveway right now.
It's the circle is complete.
It's not much newer either. And it was a golden age because it was right at the beginning and the thrust of the British invasion with the Beatles and the Stones. And the music was just wonderful, and it was relatively easy to play and do all the covers and. So I was really interested in that. When I graduated from high school and moved back to California with the pretense of going to college, I enrolled in college, but I didn't go very much. And I immediately sort of got myself jobs playing in saloons just as a single around here in Southern California. And it's kind of rough. For a 17-year-old kid coming from the Midwest, because Southern California, I'm sorry, there's people that are starving to death who are incredibly good musicians and songwriters. And in Nebraska, it was like shooting fish in a barrel, But here, I was the fish. But I really lucked out, got jobs. Again, I was so unaware of my own lack of talent. That I just go in and say, well, you need me to open for Hoyt Axton here. You need
right.
me to open for the Dillards. And then, well, oh, I guess we do then. Okay. So I got, some very good gigs and made some very good contacts and was pretty much successful. Then I was introduced to LSD.
Yes.
And that changed my focus. Not that I didn't want to be a musician, because a great part of my career was yet ahead of me there.
Right.
But it changed my material, and that's when I started to write. And I figured if I was lucky enough to have a venue to write music, I better have something to say. So I hooked up with my partner, Charlie D. We recorded under the name Charlie D. and Milo. And we had an occult dictionary, a little cheap occult dictionary. And we would just sit around in one of our respective living rooms with our guitar and a big, big bag of Mexican commercial pot. The type of stuff that you can just roll up huge bombers and never get anything but silly, And we would open that occult dictionary at random and just write a song about just right where our finger fell.
Right.
So we did pretty good. We got some songs published, and we got a couple other people doing our songs. And then Constance and I dropped out and moved to Southern Oregon and more or less put that on hold. We moved to Southern Oregon to become hippies. We were really good hippies. We had we got about a quarter acre of land by the Illinois River in Southern Oregon, and we built my brother a house, and we ran out of money after we got his house built, and I said, look, let's drive back to Southern California, right, and I'll get a job in a saloon, and I'll sing for 2 weeks, and we'll get enough money to buy the material for our house.
Right.
And so just on a whim, we just pack up the blue VW panic bus and go back to Southern California. Second we get to Costa Mesa, I walk into a saloon known to me.
Uh-huh.
You got to remember, I'm underage all this time.
Of course.
Doing all this saloon work, and I'm not even 21 yet. And the guy behind the bar, who I've never seen before, he says, "Hey, you're Lonnie, aren't you? You're Lonnie Duquette, aren't you?"
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He says, "Hey, do you want to go to work tonight?" I go, "Sure."
How did you know?
That's what we came down for. And as it turned out, my old partner, my writing partner, Charlie D, had a gig at this swanky place called the Reuben E. Lee. It was a riverboat in Newport Harbor. Very swanky place. And he was just making too much money for one person. And, and
what's that like?
I showed up and I sat in on his gig, and we went out in the parking lot afterwards and smoked a bunch of that commercial Mexican dope, and I said, "Well, let me work with you for 2 weeks and so I can get the money." He says, "Okay," and so that's what I did for 2 weeks. I worked with him for five nights a week. Very swanky place. Sure enough, I saved up enough money and stayed with friends and. I saved up enough money to buy the material for the house back in Oregon. We packed up the van and on a Saturday,
right.
And I went and worked that last Saturday night at the Rubens. I wasn't even going to go to bed. The van was packed to go back to Oregon.
Right.
And it just happened that two producers from Columbia Records were in there that night, and they were celebrating because they produced a group called The Spiral Staircase that had two number one hits within 60 days. I Love You More Today Than Yesterday. It was sort of a East Coast-sounding thing. But they were celebrating, and they got good and drunk, and they got so drunk that we started to sound good to them. And they said, "You guys, you guys ought to record. We ought to do a demo."
Uh-huh.
And I'd heard that stuff before, and I was really happy being a hippie up in Oregon, and my van was packed.
Yeah.
We were ready to go, and they really did talk us into staying another week. They said they'd set up a demo at CBS, and so I stayed another week. We did the demo at CBS. Clive Davis heard our material, got us
a real record deal,
yeah, and we recorded on Epic, did two singles and an album with Epic, and for all intents and purposes, we never went back to Oregon.
It's amazing.
The single went pretty good and went to number one in a few markets,
right,
wherever it was distributed, and the album did very well and went Billboard magazine. It was a spotlight pick. Billboard magazine got us a lot of good press and stuff.
And you toured with it?
Toured with it, absolutely. And we opened for like Arlo Guthrie and of course Dillard's and Nitty Gritty,
right,
Dirt Band. That's kind of the genre we were. But because we did our own stuff, we weren't a cover band.
Right.
And the reason we weren't a cover band is because we weren't good enough to be a goddamn cover band. And So, what do you compare our own stuff to? There's nothing to compare it to. So, well, they must be good because,
right,
I've never heard anything like that. And Johnny Rivers, you're probably too young to remember Johnny Rivers, but he was very big. And he heard us playing one night at the Troubadour in Hollywood, and he liked our tune and wanted to record it just like we did it. So we appeared on his next album, which is, all of this is kind of still available.
Wow.
Stuff. I guess Charlie D and Milo fell victim to the excesses of moderate success in those days. And by the excesses, I mean, you know, the alcohol and the cocaine and things like that.
Right.
And although I was the biggest wimp of the entire group. You know, I hate to admit it, but I was pretty much of a wuss as far as, you know, getting too drunk or getting too doped up. But eventually came to making a decision about whether I wanted to maintain a nice, stable family.
Right.
And to pursue my spiritual quest,
right,
which had always been the focus. Our songs, even our album was, as we'll hear, you know, hopefully there's a song called Inner Man, and the album song's called Om Sweet Om, theme from Mount Ori, it starts off sylphs and gnomes and undines too, salamanders beckon you, Astor Lee, I think I've been here before. And so, you know, there's a couple nods to the commercial market, but for the most part, we were a pretty spacey, magical kind of group in
right.
an era where you could be spacey and mystical. But I eventually got out of music. Just, it was almost like a health decision.
Right. I can understand.
It was a health decision. And but there I was, 24 years old, by the time I really kind of weaned myself from music. And I was totally unprepared for objective reality. I had no college education to speak of, except for, you know, as a drama major, you know.
Right.
So I figured I'd learn how to act like I knew what I was doing.
Right.
And I guess that, thank God I learned how to act like that, because that's
it worked.
It was, and it remains, a real struggle to keep a roof over our heads, because I really wasn't focused on a career. I was lucky enough that my art put a roof over our head and it made a pretty good living. As musicians go, we made a damn good living.
Right. Well, you do a lot of work as far as writing and a number of other things, and even online classes and these different things. It's amazing how prolific you are in all these different areas, and yet you're kind of saying it's still without having to like resort to the typical mundane type of 9-to-5 job, a difficult struggle.
Right, right. I went ahead and did a 9-to-5 job. All the books that I've written, I had a 9-to-5 job while I was writing those books. And some of those 9-to-5 jobs were pretty damn funky. and I was lucky enough for the last 9 years that I did have that 9-to-5 job that, as luck would have it, you know, the company I was working for was bought by a bigger company, which was bought by a bigger company, which was bought by a bigger company. By the time I was working for the biggest commercial real estate company in the world, they didn't know what the hell I did for a living. What do you do here? Why, I don't know. That lawn, he comes in early and leaves late, but, you know, what does he do? I'm not sure.
That's perfect.
And so I wrote probably four of the last, 5 or 6 books right there at work. In the last 3 years, I came totally out of the closet at work, you know, because every day I would go with the attitude, you know, they're going to find me out today. I'm going to get fired today.
Right.
And finally, I just couldn't stand the living a lie. And,
right.
You know, I said, hey, you guys, I write books on magic, and probably half of you will think I'm some kind of a Satanist.
Right.
And you know, after they got to know me for 5 years, they didn't care if I was a black magician.
I can completely see that.
Yeah.
I can see that happening.
It was almost like, well, if Lon says it's okay, it must be okay.
Right.
and bless their hearts, they're still friends. Their kids contact me and said, "Would you marry us?" You
know, that's great.
I didn't even have a guitar for 25 years. That's how much I got out of it. A dear friend, an OTO member who just died, Ken Hyde, on a winter solstice party we had here at the lodge, bought me a little Jasmine acoustic guitar. So I started playing ukulele, and I started playing that Jasmine guitar, and all of a sudden I thought to myself, well, maybe I have what I was lacking 25 years earlier. You know, I think I probably do have something to say. Once I picked up the guitar, it's so strange, you know, because, you know, I don't even have the same molecules I had, you know, 25 years ago.
Certainly not, yeah.
All of a sudden, it takes about, you know, 3 weeks, and I'm playing the guitar better than I've ever played it in my life. You know, it's not good yet, but it's better than I've ever been.
Right.
You know, my ear goes into far more colorful progressions, and you know, I'm seasoned. It's just like you wake up one day and you play the guitar, you know.
Well, I mean, you certainly have been listening to music in the meantime, you know, maybe on some other level, unconsciously or whatever. You were working it out, at least in that area.
I think so. So what I'm going through right now is probably, we could probably term it, you know, one of my fourth or fifth midlife crises. You know, it's just there's Lon again wanting to be loved, you know, and I'm the first one to say, oh, please love me.
You know? So are you going to tour? I mean, I saw you play at Noticon, and I know there's impromptu performances I've witnessed too, but you going to take it on the road?
Yeah, I'm taking it on the road. I'm going to be at Pantheacon. And last year, about half my talk was with songs, and I think I'm going to do even more this time. And when I went to Australia, set me up with a gig at a club called The Alchemist, and I did two concerts when I went to Tokyo, and one at a place called Super Deluxe. And I thought, oh, what a corny name. How Japanese,
right.
You know. Oh, super. Oh, I'm going to be a super deluxe.
Yeah.
And I write my son, who lives in Japan and who writes the CD and club reviews for Japanese magazine. And I said, hey, get this. I'm going to be playing at a place called Super Deluxe. And he, how profane can I get on this show?
As profane as you care to.
Oh, really?
Okay. Do what thou wilt.
Well, okay. Well, anyway, I emailed him and said, I'm going to be playing at Super Deluxe. And he writes back, holy monkey fuck. That's the most prestigious place in the prestigious Zumbukuzu district of Tokyo.
Right.
It really impressed my son, anyway. So,
right.
And
how were you received? Did you...
I'm seeing pretty well, you know, because I talk. I just don't stand up and start singing.
Right, right.
And I talk a little bit and kind of warm everybody up. Yeah, I figure if I don't do that, unless people are immediately prepared to forgive me, I better not start singing. Yeah.
Right.
On the Black album, there's a couple of other things. I found out some more information about my great-grandfather, whose name was William Lake. He was a full-blood Cherokee Indian.
Okay.
Worked for the Bill Cody's Wild West show.
Oh, wow.
And he was a Roman rider. And that's a guy that rides standing on two horses.
Okay.
And he shortly after he impregnated my great-grandmother, who was the daughter of a Scottish rancher in North Platte, my great-grandfather, William Lake, died or was killed under suspicious circumstances at a performance. His gear had been tampered with, you know, like a bridle broke, and he was trampled to death.
Wow.
And the rumor was, either unsubstantiated or not, well, you could kill an Indian in those days.
Sure.
The rumor that passed down through the family was that her father had, you know, he was wealthy enough to have his some of his ranch hands, you know, tamper with a guy's gear. And then my great-grandmother, she never married, and she went crazy, absolutely crazy. My mother had only met her two or three times. You know, living out there on the prairie of Nebraska, I'm sorry, it's really easy to go crazy. And to have, you know, that kind of a background, my brother and I lived in western Nebraska for a short period, and it is, you know, if a country... If a landscape, if topography can be evil, that place, it just saps people's souls. It really, really does. And you can't, you know, I admire, you know, people with a gumption that can live out there and survive, you know, and they live to be 400 years old there, you know, but the last 390 years in very ill health.
Yeah.
Very, very grim. Not really an occult song, but I wrote a song called Roman Rider, and that's on the Black Album.
Well, let's have a listen to it.
She was a rancher's daughter down in old North Platte. Came from Scotland when she was a baby. Her wealthy father doted on his lass. She grew up wild and handsome. She drove the ranch hands mad. Never one would dare to court her favor. Old man McConnell sure would shoot him dead. He was a Roman rider in Cody's Wild West show. Rode a pair of high galloping stallions. Standing on their backs, he stole the show. Will Lake was full blood Cherokee, with hair as black as night. Claire McConnell watched him from the bleachers. Her heart was his when he rode into sight. And the wind thrills through the sandhills of Nebraska. The prairie sod can bury your soul. Her daddy found the lovers locked in a sweet embrace. Swore he'd kill the filthy raping redskin. He tore Claire from his arms and slapped her face. And the wind thrills through the sandhills of Nebraska. The prairie sod can bury your soul. The Sunday show was sold out. All North Platte was there. They came to see the handsome Roman rider. Old Man McConnell brought his daughter Claire. Out rode the Roman rider, his horses drawn in tight. Old Man McConnell smiled and pinched his daughter. Look on your engine lover while you might. And the wind thrills through the sand hills of Nebraska. The prairie sod can bury your soul. Then in the dusty thunder, as his twin horses sped, a bridle broke, lake tumbled down between them. Beneath their hooves was crushed his lovely head. And the wind thrills through the sand hills of Nebraska. The prairie sod can bury your soul. She died a rancher's daughter. The prairie took her mind. Her bastard son grew strong and wild and handsome. A trail of broken hearts he'd leave behind. And the wind thrills through the sand hills of Nebraska. In the sand hills of Nebraska, roll on.
Well, I have to say, it's a side one isn't used to seeing of you.
Well, it's hard to think of me as a grandson.
I guess that's part of it, yeah.
So, yeah, that's Roman Rider. Yeah, I don't know what the rest of my relatives would think about it, but anyway, that's...
Well, that's, secrets, I'm sure it would be challenging to some of them to hear.
Right.
And knowing it's out there, but there is a catharsis in that. So it's hard to say. Lots of families with lots of secrets.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nice. It's very heartening to... Even though it's difficult, I think, to hear, it's heartening to hear.
Well, it's one of those, that's how folk music is, sort of.
Yeah,
you know, it's
true.
That can be, it's, Constance calls it diabolic Americana.
Mm. Interesting.
So anyway, but like I said, it's not overtly occult.
Well, it was. It was a secret.
Yeah, it was a secret, for sure.
So it's not a cult anymore.
Yeah.
But I know another track I'd love to hear you talk about a bit is Guardian Angel in Disguise.
Yeah, Guardian Angel in Disguise was... I don't know what came over me, because I'm not Irish. I don't, and the song isn't particularly Irish. It has an Irish lilt to it.
Right.
In a way, it was sort of a vision, and I don't know if the vision was, in relationship to any, Enochian work that I was doing or anything in particular. I had two melodies that came from kind of a very strange. Sort of out of the blue, and they painted this vision of a guy getting ready to commit suicide. Well, the song sort of narrates it, but it's one of those things that something is going on when the whole thing falls into place in about 3 hours. Some of the songs like Roman Rider, there I had the melody for well over a year. I had no idea what to put to it, and then all of a sudden, Great Grandpa Lake comes riding into my life, and I go, "Oh, hey, there you go!" You know,
right?
And, but this one was came so much out of the blue, the whole thing sort of fell together. And by the time I listened to it, I said, "Gee, that sounds like an old Irish folk song that I wrote 10 minutes ago."
You know,
if you want to get occult about it, I'm so pissed at hearing fundamentalist Christian preachers pretentiously quote Paul when he says, you know, we don't fight against flesh and blood, we fight against powers and principalities. Now, excuse me, powers and principalities are perfectly lovely things, okay, in the, you know, the Kabbalistic hierarchy of heavenly beings. Powers and principalities and dominions and all of that, you know, they've only been, you know, given a negative connotation because idiots, you know, because idiots think that anything that isn't their narrow point of view is evil. So part of the powers and principalities, you know, I wanted a folk song kind of thing that everybody, no matter what their religious point of view is, even, you know, the fundamental point of view, I wanted them to hear that in a context where they could almost, you know, not argue with the fact that perhaps they've misunderstood those concepts their whole life. And I think that's what part of the thing that writing music and writing songs can do that writing books doesn't quite, you know, afford. Because, you know, I do the very best I can, but still, you know, my books are titled, you know, Angels, Demons, and Gods of the New Millennium. My books are,
right.
You know, The Magic of Aleister Crowley.
Right.
You know, I'm preaching to the converted, which is okay because, you know, hopefully I have something that I can say and contribute to people who are you know, already esoterically educated. But there's also a huge audience of people that have just not thought about things in a particular way. People who, you know, are good people at heart, who are smart people at heart, who, the example of what I told you about all the people at work. You know, once they got to know me for 5 years, I could say anything I wanted. And,
right.
And they were just, well, okay, and I have to think that was spiritually that they evolved. No matter how small, they evolved because of that relationship. And so the potentiality of, well, to give an example, I go to these open mic nights here in Southern California, and I have to think that the open mic nights in Southern California and in big urban areas are different than open mic nights in, in smaller venues. Okay,
right,
because
right,
some
right.
of the most talented musicians and songwriters in the world are like within a 25-mile radius of me.
Exactly.
So I go to these open mic nights, and here in Orange County, a great deal of the acoustic kind of music venues and job opportunities are in churches,
right.
In these large mega churches and stuff. And so a lot of the singers, songwriters that are my fellow performers at these venues are singing about Jesus. First of all, it's good for me to, you know, not bite my tongue and throw my shoes at people. Like I do the television, because you know these people are, you know, I need to be tolerant every once in a while.
Uh-huh.
But not only that, these are very, very talented people, and they're expressing themselves through music in the outlet that is available to them. And I'll sing a few songs. I'll sing like I'd love to get drunk in the car. You know,
right.
I'll always open up with that because it's like a magic song. Once you sing that, they'll accept anything I sing.
Right, right.
So I'll do that, and they'll be singing their songs about Jesus, and then I will slip them. Once they get to know me, I'll slip them something like this guardian angel song.
Right.
And all of a sudden, I can see the wheels turning in their head.
Right.
And that's what art is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as funky as my material is, and as funky as my presentation of it is, you know, I feel like I've done a little bit of work as an artist.
Right.
And I think that's good for anybody to do.
Certainly. Yeah, let's give the track a listen.
Okay.
In despair without a prayer, I set my mind to bring to an end this travesty of life. One bullet would serve, but I lost my nerve to fire the round and mercifully end this tragedy of life. So I pulled on my boots and cursed the snow, each and every step down to the inn. There I would drink and make my courage grow, till a stranger sitting near me butted in. Buy me a drink, my friend, and I will stand and sing. Sing you the sweetest song you ever heard. Three fingers of gin, and when it's in, I'll stand and sing. Sing you the sweetest song you ever heard. Then we will raise our glasses high in toast. Toast to all the angels in our lives. To our dear mothers, brothers, sweethearts, wives, and to the guardian angel in disguise. I could tell that the fool was a luckless soul who craved the juice. I bought him a drink and prayed he'd go away. God bless you, he said, and cocked his head and down the booze. Closed his gray eyes and seemed to drift away. Then as my mind returned to thoughts of doom, the stranger sat up straight just like a king. Then he pulled off his cap and hushed the room, and rising to his feet began to sing. Drink to principalities and powers, and the seraphim of flowers in the springtime. Drink to archangels and dominions, soaring with their downy pinions through the stars. Drink to the cherubic choir that hovers over sleeping babies, covers through night's danger. Drink to the angel in disguise who has watched you through the eyes of countless strangers. When he was done, the room was stunned. His eyes shone clear. I swear there was not a dry eye in the place. God bless you, he said, and fell down dead right then and there. Cap in his hand, a smile upon his face. Then all of us raised our glasses high to toast. Toast to all the angels in our lives. To our dear mothers, brothers, sweethearts, wives. And to the guardian angel in disguise.
Yeah, that's a pretty sly song. And you found people seeming to open up, or their energy was receptive.
Yeah, but anyway, that's a goofy little thing. It's not normal kind of ditty that I usually write.
Well, if people want to get the Black Album, do they go to lonmiloduquette.com? Is that the website they should go to?
Yeah, well, you know, the easiest way at the moment, lonmiloduquette.com is having a bit of trouble.
Okay.
So, you know, the very easiest thing to do, if they don't mind emailing me directly, and then I can send them back, a longer link, so we won't, okay, won't have to do it here on the. If they just email lonmilo@gmail.com, I will be happy to send them the direct link that they can get it directly from the Kunaki folks.
Okay.
And
perfect.
So and if they want to, you know, call me or write me and tell them what an idiot they think I am and everything else, that's my email address. So
so perfect.
So there it is. So it's lonmilo@gmail.com. I'm at your mercy. I've got, you know, like a Reverb Nation account, and if you Google around, I'm sure you can hear a few of them on the Internet. And I'm really not asking anybody to listen to it. I really want you to buy it, though.
Yeah.
And the cover is attractive enough to leave on the coffee table.
Right.
And
they can purchase right now with no obligation to listen. That's
no
perfect.
Obligation. Yeah, no obligation to listen to it.
Well, that's good. Well, I guess we should wrap up, but I'm thinking you have a book coming out in November you might want to mention?
Yes. I've got a book called Low Magic. Low Magic, it's subtitled, it's all in your head, you just have no idea how big your head is. It's my first book with Llewellyn.
Okay.
So far they've been very, 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 very nice to me. Kind of looking forward to it. But in a way it's like a My Life with the Spirits Part 2.
Right.
Okay. It's mostly, you know, stories of magical operations that I've, you know, either bungled or involved myself in over the years,
right,
and sort of a focus on using the Solomonic formula.
Right.
The title Low Magic is sort of tongue in cheek.
Right.
Low magic being any kind of magic that you actually do instead of just talk about.
Well, hopefully you'll talk to us again when the book's coming out.
Well, I hope so, and thanks for having me on this time, too. It's
Certainly. I think we're going to listen to Inner Man as we exit, and is there anything you'd like to add?
Well, Inner Man is it's one of those Charlie D and Milo open up the occult dictionary at random, and we opened it up to Inner Man, and way back then, you know, I wasn't familiar with Crowley or anything else, and this inner man is actually, you know, the holy guardian angel. Maybe I was, 19 years old when I wrote it. It was one of the Charlie D and Milo songs that was kind of a Milo song. If you can't hear the chorus, there's, you know, because we're a singing duo. It's a duet. One of us, I think, I'm singing the phrase, all in the all in the all in all. And Charlie is singing, I am the inner man at the same time. So
you got to love how that stuff comes together in retrospect.
Yeah, it really is. It blows my mind. I'm amazed at how wise I was when I was 19.
Yes. We've been talking today with Lon Milo Duquette, author, musician, lecturer, and magician. More information can be found at www.lonmiloduquette.ning.com. And thank you for listening to Thelema Now. Now let's have a listen to Inner Man.
Softly hear me sing, find me in.